This Is Your Life, episode 64. Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. In this episode, I'll be talking about two kinds of thinkers, which are you. This is a critically important topic because how you think determines everything else in your life, the outcomes you're getting, the quality of your relationships, everything. And in addition, at the end of the show, I'm going to share with you a super practical tip on how to defeat anxiety, discouragement, and even anger. I guarantee it. And if you struggle with any of these, you're going to want to hang on to the end and listen to this week's tip of the week. But first, this podcast is brought to you by Platform University, an online membership site for helping you launch your personal platform or taking it to the next level. And you can find out more at platformuniversity.com. And by the way, if you're already a member, I hope by now you've had a chance to watch this month's masterclass. I interviewed WordPress guru Andrew Buckman about 10 mistakes you're probably making with your website and how to fix them. Andrew is my personal developer. He's also my partner in the Get Noticed theme for WordPress, and he really is a guru. And this is a super practical masterclass, but you can check it out at Platform University. And I hope if you're not a member, you'll take time to do so. It's so worth your investment if you're trying to build a personal platform. So let's get into this week's topic. Over the years, I've noticed that there are two kinds of thinking. One kind leads to success, joy, and fulfillment. The other leads to failure, fear, and discontent. King Solomon said it best when he said, "For as a man thinks in his heart, so is he." And it's true. That's Proverbs 23:7. But it's easy, or at least easier, to see how other people's thinking affects their quality of life. It's a little more difficult to see how our own thinking affects the results we're getting. But we've got to do that if we're going to make progress, if we're going to experience the level of success and effectiveness that I know you want if you're listening to this podcast. What I want to suggest this week is that there is a cause and effect relationship between our thinking and our actions. If you look behind the outcomes in any area of life, you'll see specific actions that caused them. But if you look beyond the actions, you'll see the thoughts that gave birth to them. So if you change your thinking, you'll change your actions. And if you change your actions, you'll change your outcomes. It's that simple. And if you change your outcomes, by the way, you'll change your life. So two kinds of thinking. My friend Robert Smith, I've talked about him on this podcast before. He's a great friend. He lives not too far up the road from me, but he's a great example of the first kind of thinking. He's one of the most generous people I know. He always greets me with a big smile, a hug, an encouraging word, and I always leave his presence energized, feeling great, frankly, about being me. And I've noticed that he's like this with everyone. As it turns out, I'm not that special, but he treats employees, vendors, booking agents, publishers, everyone else as if they were his best customers. And he routinely invests in their success, and it comes back to him in a thousand ways. And he's the best example I have of an abundance thinker. And my wife, Gail, I also think is an abundance thinker as well. She just gives and gives, and she just got an attitude about her that's very, very winsome. Well, one of my former clients, Charlie, not his real name, is just the opposite. He exhibits what I would refer to as a hoarding mentality or a scarcity mentality. He never picks up the check, even if he asks you to lunch. He constantly complains about everything. I haven't seen him in years, but when I did, I always left his presence drained and diminished. And it turns out that he too was like this with everyone, his employees, even his family members. Some of them complained to me, but they would roll their eyes when you mentioned his name. They lived in constant fear that their livelihood and their well-being were at risk. And interestingly, the success that he craved seemed to elude him. Charlie is the best example I know of a scarcity thinker. So those two types of thinkers, the abundance thinker, the scarcity thinker, which kind are you? My guess is you probably know some people like this. The question, though, is what type of thinker are you? Maybe it's time to do some honest self-evaluation, and better yet, ask those who are closest to you. You know, as I was out running the other day, and I was thinking about this and thinking about this podcast episode, I thought through eight characteristics of abundance thinkers. And when I'm out running, I try to note this stuff, and then I just came back, and before I even took off my clothes or got in the shower or anything, I just jotted these down. But here are the eight characteristics of abundance thinkers. Number one, they believe that there's always more where that came from. In fact, that's one of Gail's favorite sayings and one of the things that we say around the Hyatt House all the time, especially when we experience some kind of loss. You know, well, hey, there's always more where that came from, because it's easy to have the opposite attitude. Number two, they're happy. Abundance thinkers are happy to share their knowledge, their contacts, and their compassion with others. And Tim Sanders has written a great book about this called Love is the Killer App. I'll have a link in the show notes. But it's all about that. It's all about the secret to success is sharing your knowledge, your contacts, and your compassion, which he defines as love in a business context. And it's a fabulous book. I've given away dozens of these books. I've reread it a couple of times, but it's just a great reminder that if you want to get ahead, you've got to have an abundance mentality and share freely with other people. Third characteristic, abundance thinkers default to trust, and therefore they build rapport easily. Now, you've known people that are the opposite of that. You know, they default to suspicion. But abundance thinkers don't do that. They trust you until you're proven guilty. They just start the relationship with that basis because they assume that everybody is like them, that they're trustworthy, that they have integrity. And do they get burned occasionally? Yeah. But this is a whole lot better way to live than to try to live out of a scarcity kind of mindset. Fourth characteristic, they welcome competition. Ooh, this is the tough one. They believe it makes the pie bigger and them better. And I know it's easy to sort of give lip service to that, but when it really comes down to it, to hate the competition, I love competition. I hope you do too. It makes me raise the bar. It makes me perform better. And, you know, I do think it makes the pie bigger for everyone because it creates more awareness. So I've got a lot of people, for example, in the podcast space that compete with this podcast. I'm happy to promote them because I do believe it makes the pie bigger. And I believe also that they've got valuable content that you need to hear. Fifth characteristic, they ask themselves, how can I give more than is expected? In other words, they don't just start with what the other person expects and deliver just that. And by the way, that's the recipe for not delivering wow. If you want to deliver wow, you've got to over-deliver and deliver more than your customers, your prospects, your readers, your subscribers, your members, whatever it is. You've got to over-deliver and exceed their expectations if you have a hope of wowing them. And the abundance thinkers, they're asking themselves, how can I give more than what's expected? What do they expect? And how can I exceed that? Another characteristic, sixth characteristic of abundance thinkers, they're optimistic about the future, believing the best is yet to come. Because if, after all, life is full of abundance, then why would you think that's all behind you? Why would you think that your best days are over? No, they get refocused on the future, and they're thinking about all the possibilities that exist. What has yet to happen? What's the abundance I have yet to experience? And they're like on their tippy toes, leaning into the future. And I love that kind of attitude. Characteristic seven. They think big and they embrace risk because if everything else about their worldview is correct, you know, there's really not that much at risk. What's the worst that can happen? You might fail. Ooh. And what happens with that? Usually it's not as bad as you think. You know, you're probably not going to die. You're probably just going to stumble. And most failure you can recover from if, this is a key point, if you don't quit. But I like to say there's no failure, there's only learning. Or as someone else has said, and I can't remember who this is, so I probably should attribute it to him, but I can't remember. There's no such thing as failure. There's only feedback. I love that too. Eighth characteristic, abundance thinkers are thankful. In other words, they're grateful and they're confident because of their worldview, because of their focus on abundance. They're able to be grateful and able to be confident about moving forward into the future. So those are the eight characteristics of abundance thinkers, but I also noted sort of the opposites, the eight characteristics of scarcity thinkers. And my intention here in sharing this is so all of us can recognize this kind of thinking, this what Zig Ziglar used to call stinking thinking. When this kind of thinking shows up between our ears, we can recognize it and shift gears. So here are the eight characteristics of scarcity thinkers. They believe there will never be enough. You know, maybe they grew up in an environment of lack, or the people around them that were influential had that mental, that mindset. And so they think there's never going to be enough. What a horrible way to live. That's the kind of thing that makes you a hoarder. That's the kind of thing that makes you stingy. It's the kind of thing that makes you greedy. But it's a worldview. It's a belief system that starts before any actions. Second characteristic, they're stingy with their knowledge, their contacts, and their compassion. Have you ever known somebody where you ask them how to do something, maybe some technical thing, and you know, they're kind of cagey. They kind of don't want to reveal anything to you. They've got that suspicion, or they won't share contacts with you, or they withhold, worse, compassion. There's just no love in their life. And you've got to have love not only for your family members, not only for the people that are close to you, but for your competitors. You know, you can never do wrong by doing what's right. Number three, third characteristic, they default to suspicion and they find it difficult to build rapport. People that are not trusting are generally not trustworthy. If they're not trusting, they don't build rapport. People don't want to do business with them. They don't want to engage in a relationship with them because that person is withholding something. They're generous. People may not be able to articulate what it is, but it's scarcity thinking, and this is how it shows up. Fourth characteristic, they resent competition, believing it makes the pie smaller and them weaker. You know, a new competitor enters the marketplace, and scarcity thinkers go, oh my gosh, what are we going to do now? Well, I'll tell you what you're going to do now. You're going to get better. You're going to get your offer framed in a more compelling way. You're going to take your business and your life to the next level. That's what an abundance thinker does. But a scarcity thinker dreads that because they don't have a worldview that allows for abundance that they can draw on. Fifth characteristic, they ask themselves, how can I get by with less than is expected? You know, you see so many people doing this in corporate America, cutting corners, you know, shaving expenses. And believe me, I'm all for cutting expenses too, as long as it doesn't inhibit me from the ability to over-deliver. I would rather over-deliver and not make as much money, but leave my customers and readers wowed than to be profitable on this transaction and somehow sacrifice the relationship. I'm telling you, if you're going to be successful, particularly in business, you've got to have the long view. You've got to do what's right for the relationship, even if it means you lose a couple times on the intermediate transactions. You get that reversed and you may be successful in the short term, but you're not going to get the referrals. You're not going to get the upsells. You're not going to get all the things that you need as a business person to succeed. So fifth characteristic of scarcity thinkers is that they ask themselves, how can I get by with less than is expected? Sixth characteristic, they're pessimistic about the future, believing that tough times are ahead. Now, this is one of the reasons I hate watching the news. I mean, you say, well, yeah, you're just sticking your head in the sand. You know, I don't think so. I mean, I think I keep up. If there's something that's urgent that I need to know about, somebody tells me about it. But I don't keep my mindset immersed in all of that negative, stinking thinking. Because one of the things we got to remember is that in the world of cable television, where these people have responsibility, the cable network owners and producers and programmers have a responsibility to create programming 24/7, that they just discuss this negative news ad nauseum. And worse than that, they make it negative because there's got to be drama. You know, there's got to be a victim. There's got to be a protagonist. There's got to be all this drama. And they overly dramatize the news. I don't care if you're on the right or the left. Both sides are guilty of this. It's not healthy. It's not healthy for our country. It's not healthy for us as individuals. And if you listen to this on a regular basis, it will make you pessimistic. It will change your thinking, and I promise, it will begin to affect your personal results in your life, your relationships, and your business results. It's just not worth it. Yeah, you know, let's just take the economy, for example. Do we have problems? Absolutely. You know, I'm really concerned about, you know, the debt and, you know, the programs that just seem to proliferate forever. You know, I hate all that too. And I think there's, you know, there could be tough times ahead with regard to the economy. However, I believe we'll figure it out. You know, I believe that when we get there, it won't be the end of the world as we know it. And even if it is, you know, my own personal view, I guess as a faith person, is that the end of the world is not the end of the world. It's the beginning of a new world. So, you know, from my perspective, it's all good. Seventh characteristic, these scarcity thinkers think small. They're constantly avoiding risk. You know, they don't want to push outside of their comfort zone. They want to do what's comfortable. And as a result, they don't grow. Their business doesn't expand. They don't become all that they can be. They don't realize their potential. I'm telling you, one of the keys to success, I think, is to push outside of your comfort zone. To get out there where you begin to feel a little discomfort. And when you do that, you know you're in the right zip code in terms of goal setting. So get out there and think big. Don't be like a scarcity thinker who thinks small, avoiding risk, because you're totally focused on what you're going to lose, not on potentially what you could win. I'm not saying, you know, be careless or be cavalier or don't be thoughtful. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm saying that you just can't have this kind of scarcity, poverty mentality that is only focused on what you're going to lose. Eighth and final characteristic of scarcity thinkers is that they feel entitled. And they feel fearful. So they're so focused on what they have, they're not thinking about the possibilities of what could be. And it makes them fearful. They're afraid of what they're going to lose, not what they're going to win. And I can tell you in sports, and it's true in life, if you're really focused on what you're going to lose instead of what you're going to win, guess what? You're going to lose. You're going to move toward what you focus on. I think I've said this on the podcast before, but I remember a story, I think Tony Robbins tells this, of how they train race car drivers, that when you're out on the track, one of the things they say when you're going high speed around a turn is do not look at the wall, because your steering will follow where your head is pointed. And so they teach these guys to look where they want to go, not where they're afraid of going, because the vehicle is going to follow their hands and their hands are going to follow their mind, and you're going to move toward what you focus on. Look, the truth is that for most of us, we're not either or. We're not, you know, an abundance thinker, or we're not a scarcity thinker. We're probably a little bit of both. But which of these produces the most positive outcomes? You know, it's obvious, isn't it? Abundance thinking. People naturally want to be around abundance thinkers. And because of this, these people get lots of opportunities coming their way. Scarcity thinkers are just the opposite. People don't want to be around them. And so they miss a lot of opportunities. It's like they hold up their hands and they push away the opportunities. So if being an abundance thinker isn't that important, how can you develop this ability? And this is what I want to spend a few minutes on in the conclusion of this lesson. Number one, cultivate awareness. Just periodically ask, at this moment, am I operating from abundance or scarcity? Maybe you hear about a new competitor. Maybe you lose something. Maybe a deal goes south, or you don't get a piece of business that you were angling for. Or someone leaves your church. I mean, it could be 1,001 things, but ask, at this moment, am I operating from abundance or scarcity? Because I can promise you, if you operate from abundance, you're going to get a much better outcome than if you operate from scarcity. Number two, practice gratitude. You know, we've got to recognize the gifts that are all around us. And so often we focus on our lack, what's missing. And for example, we complain about our lack of vibrant, real relationship with God, or we wish our church were bigger or smaller, or we wish we had a spouse, or perhaps we wish we didn't have a spouse, or maybe we want to change our spouse, or we wish we could get a different job or a different boss or a bigger paycheck, or we wished we had more interesting work or more sensitive coworkers, or, you know, different hours, or we wished we could live in a different city or a different part of the city or a different house, and we complain about our furniture and our cars and all the other stuff. To state the obvious, this is not healthy. Do we really think that this complaining spirit will lead to better relationships, better outcomes, or more abundance? No. You won't get more of what you want until you learn to be thankful for what you have. I mean, if you're taking notes, double underline that. It's a life principle, and it's key to your success. It's key to your contentment. It's key to your satisfaction. It's key to all the outcomes you're trying to generate, is focus on what you have and be thankful for it and start from a position of gratitude. So cultivate awareness, practice gratitude, and the third step, be generous. Live with your hands open. Give freely. Share your knowledge, your contacts, and your compassion, as Tim Sanders admonishes in Love is the Killer app. And again, I'll have a link here in the show notes. So I hope that's been helpful. You can tell I'm very convinced about this, and it's a very important topic to me. But I'll be back in a minute with our listener Q&A segment. All right, welcome back. We've got two questions that I want to deal with. Both of them are great. The first one comes from Brandon.
Hi, Michael. My name is Brandon Vaughn from Austin, Texas. I blog and podcast at firstthingsproductivity.com. I recently did a podcast on stinking thinking, so I'm looking forward to this podcast. As a parent, I'm curious if you had any suggestions for teaching our children how to embrace a paradigm of abundance versus scarcity. I mean, how can we raise up a generation that learns this faster than we did? Appreciate any of your thoughts. Thank you for all you do.
Thanks, Brandon. Great question. Important to all of us as parents. I'm thankful that my parents were abundance thinkers. And, you know, to be honest, we didn't grow up with that much. I would say that we were probably the typical middle class, maybe even lower middle class family. But my parents always had an attitude of abundance. And they said things like that. Well, there's always more where that came from. Or when I would fail, they would just say, you know, it's not that big a deal. Just pick yourself up and get back on the horse. I literally had an experience like that one time when my dad bought me a small Shetland pony, and I got on it. And the first thing I did, of course, was the horse ran out from under me and I fell, and I was in a plowed field. So the grass, the dirt was soft and I didn't hurt myself, but my dad just came over, picked me up and said, "It's all right. You're doing great." And got me right back on the horse. So I think we have to model this if we're going to have a chance, have a prayer of influence in our kids. And I'll tell you something that we did around our home when our kids were growing up. They're all grown now. But when my five daughters were growing up, every time we were around the table for dinner, we would ask this question: what was the best thing that happened to you today? Now, I'm going to tell you, there were times when the kids had hard days. There were times when I came home from work and I'd had a hard day. And to be honest, I wanted to complain. I didn't want to talk about the good things because I didn't see any good things. The day was all bad. But Gail would ask me, or when she was, you know, had a tough day, I would ask. But we would always ask the kids. No, we want you focusing on what the good things were. And get this, I love this. Gail actually started this, and I think it was brilliant. But when the kids would say, like they so often would, "Well, nothing good happened today," then Gail would say something like this. She would say, "Well, if something did happen that was good, what would that have been?" You know, or, you know, just try to get them to focus on even that one little thing. You know, even if it was something that didn't happen that was a good thing, but get them to focus on their abundance. And then just to say to them when they fail or when they have some sense of loss, I mean, you've got to be empathetic. You've got to be compassionate. You can't jump too quickly to the abundance thinking, but to always have that attitude with them that, you know, if they get a bad grade, there's no failure. There's only learning. So we have to model this. That's the most important thing, I think, in every parenting question, is us modeling, because more is caught than taught. Your kids will become like you. They will do what you do, not as much what you say. So it's important to be the right kind of person, to do the right kind of things, and to model it to them. Great question, Brandon. The next question comes from Jill.
Hi, this is Jill Savage from Normal, Illinois. My website is jillsavage.org. And my question is, in pursuing abundance thinking, is there a possibility of going to an unhealthy extreme that's not beneficial to ourselves and to others? Thanks so much, Michael. Appreciate the information you provide on your podcasts. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thanks, Jill. I think that's a great question, too. Yeah, it probably is possible to go to an unhealthy extreme. I think two things come to mind. One, if you jump to abundance thinking too quickly with your friends who are going through some significant trial or setback, you know, at best it's annoying. At worst, it will really be offensive because people want to feel like they're understood, and it's important to give them your compassion first and your empathy, you know, to really, you know, not be too quick to jump to the possibilities or the positive. And I've been guilty of that in the past, and man, especially with my girls, and they did not receive that well. And sometimes you just have to kind of stew in it with them and sit down with them and just listen to them and go through their trauma. And then you can begin, as you do that, to shift the conversation. I think the other thing too is that if you get to the place of you're so abundant in your thinking that you get into denial and you're not dealing with the most brutal aspects of your current reality, I think I have another podcast on that somewhere where I talk about this whole idea of the, what was it called? It was in Good to Great, the Stockdale Paradox, that was it. The Stockdale Paradox, where on the one hand, you've got to embrace the reality of your ultimate triumph, that things are going to work out. And this all came from the life experience of Admiral James Stockdale, who was a prisoner of war in Vietnam. But the other aspect is to embrace the most brutal facts of your current reality. So you've got to have both of those. But again, it's possible to do those from an abundance kind of foundation or a scarcity foundation. And so what I would say is don't let it bleed into denial. Make sure that you're, you know, you've got a firm grip on reality and you'll be okay. But honestly, there are not too many of us that suffer from an extreme of abundance mentality. You know, that's not a corrective that most people need to be concerned about. Most people, we all know, are focused on the scarcity side of things, and that's probably where we need the adjustment. But still, it's a good question, and hope that was helpful. Now it's your turn. Question for you, and I'd love to see you answer this on my blog at michaelhyatt.com/64, which is this episode, episode 64, and these are the show notes that you can find on my blog, michaelhyatt.com/64, and the question is this: how do you see these two ways of thinking impacting your world? How do you see these two ways of thinking impacting your world? You know, maybe it's in the lives of your family or coworkers, or maybe even in your own life. I'd love to hear some stories from you, and I'll be back in a minute with some announcements and our tip of the week. Okay, three quick announcements. First of all, if you're considering launching your platform or just getting serious about it, you need to start with a self-hosted WordPress blog. And I know I talk about this every week, but it's important. And it's not as complicated as it sounds. In fact, I've put together a step-by-step screencast on exactly how to do it. You don't need any technical expertise. I'll walk you through the entire process in exactly 20 minutes. Some of you that are bright can do it at even faster speed than that, but I just updated the screencast a few weeks ago, so it's the latest and greatest information available, and it's available absolutely free. You can find it at michaelhyatt.com/WordPress setup. Second announcement, the SCORE conference for this fall continues to fill up. We're at about 80% of our capacity, and we will sell out, I promise you. Whether you're a professional speaker or have just thought about being a professional speaker or just want to perfect your communication skills, this conference will teach you how to prepare with focus, deliver with confidence, and speak with power. We've literally had thousands of students go through this over the years. And honestly, this conference has had a bigger impact on my career than any conference I've ever attended. And I attend a lot of them. But it revolutionized my speaking and has influenced every aspect of my communication, including my blogging and my podcasting. Well, my business partner, Ken Davis, who originally developed the SCORE Conference, and I will be hosting this fall's conference on October 14 through 17 at the beautiful Park Hyatt Beaver Creek Resort in Vail, Colorado. I go to Colorado a lot, and this is absolutely my favorite time of year to go, is the fall. And if you're serious about becoming a better speaker, you simply must attend. You can find out more at scoreconference.tv, and that's SCORE with two R's, scoreconference.tv. Come hang out with us. I'd love to get a chance to meet you. Let's talk about the next episode. I'm really excited about this. It's going to be on five reasons you should consider writing a book. Yeah, that's right, you. Maybe it's been a fleeting thought. Maybe it's been something you've seriously toyed with, Regardless, I'm going to convince you that you must do it. I'm going to tell you why, and I'm going to give you a first few steps on how to get started. I've spent most of my career in book publishing. I've seen it all, the good, the bad, and the ugly. I've coached thousands of authors, and I'm going to tell you why writing a book can accelerate the growth of your business, advance your personal goals, and do what nothing else can do. So we'll talk about that next week. If you've got a question about this topic, please leave me a voicemail message at michaelhyatt.com/podcastquestion. This is a terrific way to cross-promote your blog or your website because I'll link to it. You'll get the search engine optimization benefit of that, and I'll do it just like I did with the callers in this episode. So now let's move finally to the tip of the week. I want to share with you about something called the Gratitude Rock. Several years ago, at the encouragement of a friend, I started carrying this gratitude rock in my right pocket. And it's really just a small, smooth stone that I picked up from the fish pond behind our house. And I carry it with me wherever I go. And the idea is simple. Whenever my hand contacts the stone, usually several times a day, I give thanks for whatever is happening at that moment, whether it's good or bad. And it's amazing how this simple act changes my perspective and ultimately my attitude. So instead of seeing the glass half empty, I see it half full. And instead of focusing on what I don't have, scarcity thinking, I focus on what I do have, abundance thinking, right now. It's amazing how this can train your mind over time, and it's the perfect antidote to fear, discouragement, worry, anger, almost every negative emotion. You cannot be simultaneously grateful and experience these negative emotions. At least you can't do it for long. Gratitude is the antidote to these negative emotions. Well, that's about it for this episode of This Is Your Life. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please show the love by going to michaelhyatt.com/love and tweeting a link to the show. I'd be so grateful if you do that because it's a way to give visibility to the show and help me get the word out. If you'd like to comment on this episode, please go to michaelhyatt.com/064. Go down to the comment section, leave me a comment, a question, whatever you like. I'd love to hear from you. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count.